Hello and welcome. This is Tess from Jagged Edge Arts with the Art of Imagination, and today I'm speaking with Welsh actor and writer Mally Tudno-Jones, who has an extensive background in acting on both stage and screen, as well as writing stage plays, screenplays, and radio plays. I first saw Mally in the crime noir series Hidden as Rachel the Pathologist, and I've enjoyed her performances in many productions over the years, including her fairly unhinged role as Nia in the third season of the Welsh language murder mystery anthology 35 Days, for which she was nominated for a BAFTA Cymru Award, and most recently her role as Linda, the chaplain, in the bilingual prison drama Barrie, which I'm excited to say has finally been released this summer on major international streaming platforms under the English title Inside. Season 1 is out now on Acorn, Amazon, and a number of other places. I've included links to every possible production in the description, as usual, and I'm very excited to be talking to her today. So, Mally, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me. It's great to have you here.
Oh, I'm so grateful you asked. It's so lovely.
I think you guys are doing such great work over there, and I thought it'd be really nice to just draw as much attention to it as possible so that we can get more people watching, because it's good stuff.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Thank you for being so supportive. Gosh.
Oh, no, I love it. Look, I wish half the shows in the US were as good. I think you guys... Well, I think a lot of it is you all seem to have a very theatrical background, like, you know, a lot of training in the art of acting, as opposed to just like, here are some people who look like Brad Pitt, so we're going to put them in this, whether they have any training or anything.
It's funny, you'll hear quite a lot of costume people will say they know the people who have been classically trained or worked a lot in theatre because they always hang their clothes up after they finish filming for the day.
I grew up acting in theatre.
Did you?
Yeah, you know, being in New York, we're surrounded by theatre, obviously, you know, with everything. Yeah. And from like, I think I was 6 years old and I just kind of grew up training in musical theater and acting in that for a big part of my life.
It's so important, isn't it?
It's great.
It's so important, all of that. I think there's a real thing about allowing, because we allow young people and children to be childlike and to play, and there's something about the creative arts that sustain that or keeps it going as you get older. And if you've had it at all as a child, you're more likely to keep hold of it. I think that sense of childlike ability to play or find joy in stuff, you know?
Yeah. I miss acting. I don't do it anymore because I really enjoyed photography. I was into editing. And also here, it's a very different environment. I think maybe if I had been in the UK, I really like the industry you guys have there, especially in Wales. It seems really, not that there's no pressure, but it seems like everybody's really in it to make something good, you know?
Yeah, I think people are definitely invested. And I'm quite protective, I suppose, of the cast and crews here because they work so hard. And yet there's a slight judgment, I think, that sometimes people who haven't worked a lot with Welsh cast or crew tend to opt for London-based. You know, that label seems to give it more credence or weight, but it's complete rubbish, you know, because everybody here works so hard and they're so committed and supportive of each other as well.
That's important.
It's so important. And so, you know, that you're just pushing the thing as a whole, as opposed to fighting your own freelance struggle.
No, I love that. There is so much focus on, you know, Broadway or the West End, but if you make good art, it doesn't matter. It's some of the best plays I've seen were in these tiny little local playhouses, and they were amazing. Just fantastic.
Yeah, completely. That's the thing, isn't it? Is taking the ego out of it, I suppose, is just remembering. I think it's a problem everywhere. You know, it really is just that thing of remembering why you're doing it in the first place. When I was at drama school, I remember I couldn't quite settle in the first term. I was young and I'd never been away from home. I was living in a horrible flat with no hot water, no bed, no furniture. So it was pretty rubbish. But I was quite confrontational and defensive, I suppose, because I just couldn't find my feet. And I remember one of the tutors saying, you have to ask yourself why you're here. You have to ask yourself why you feel you need to tell these stories, or you feel you need to stand there in front of us. And it, you know, you don't have to tell us what it is, but you have to know. And whether that's in a tiny room somewhere or on stage at the RSC or on a Netflix thing, I think if you ground it in truth, it's all the same thing.
What is your background in the arts? I mean, are you a native Welsh speaker? Is that?
Yes.
Okay. So you didn't just learn it in school, like you grew up speaking it.
I grew up speaking it, so I'm sort of a bit of everything. My on my mother's side, it's sort of West Wales, so farming community, but also London Welsh. So they went to London to find work. And then on my father's side, it's all North Wales. And then I grew up in Cardiff.
So you're like grew up, I would assume, bilingual.
Yeah, well, you grew up bilingually here because I went to a Welsh language school, but speaking Welsh wasn't cool at all. But then when I went home, I was speaking Welsh. And certainly if my grandparents were there, which they often were, they lived with us towards the end. You know, you couldn't speak English in front of them. They would be very cross with you. And also they weren't comfortable speaking English. So it was far easier, you know. But when I went to Lambda, I remember really struggling. Like I remember on my first day, them talking about archetypes. And it was like, I had no idea what this word meant. I just remember panicking. Because I had spoken Welsh practically, you know, for most of my life. And suddenly there were these, what I felt were hefty words. So I committed then, I was just reading everything in English, absorbing, because I had to catch up. You know, you had Oxbridge graduates there who were just flying with all the Shakespeare and everything. And I just absolutely playing catch up. So I had to sort of put aside Welsh for a few years so I could catch up.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing. That's intense. But it's good thing that you had that background and you can kind of work in either environment now, I guess.
Yeah, completely. You know, Welsh is the language of the heart, I suppose. But English for me is, you know, I was listening to Stephen Fry yesterday talking about Oscar Wilde. It's just a wealth of beautiful, beautiful things, as is in Welsh as well.
I know that a few years back they did in Wales, like a bilingual version of A Midsummer Night's Dream. And I was thinking, how do you even translate, you know, Shakespeare into Welsh? That's amazing.
But that's the thing. I mean, they're doing it. They're doing it now. They're doing Romeo and Juliet. It's going to be bilingual at the Globe, which is something that should have happened years ago. Shakespeare in English suits a Welsh accent, but Shakespeare translated into Welsh is brilliant. It's beautiful and it's brilliant. And to have the Montagues and the Capulets as English and Welsh is just brilliant.
Oh, is that how they divided it? Wow.
Yeah,
oh, that's awesome.
Idea.
Oh, that's so cool.
It's a great idea. And I taught, you know, I was teaching Shakespeare to a group of students who were Welsh language and they hated Shakespeare. They'd gone to Welsh school. They were intimidated. They hated it completely. And you know, I had to work quite hard to convince them that they had a sort of inherent connection to Shakespeare because of the way they spoke in Welsh, because of their natural barddoniaeth, their natural poetry. And of course, by the end of the course, they all had fallen in love with Shakespeare.
That's incredible. And it's interesting to hear your take because so far the Welsh actors I've spoken to have all discussed the cultural value of the performing arts there, especially in Welsh language. So that shines a bit of a new light on it as well.
I know that Sean and both of them have spoken about the Eisteddfod.
Yeah.
And I love their podcast. What is astounding is S4C, the Welsh channel, as you know, dedicate a whole week of TV to the Eisteddfod. So these young people who are competing in recitation, singing, dancing, whatever, get a platform on TV.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
I cannot believe that an entire channel gives over to the development and the preservation of young people's cultural lives. It's just astounding. I don't know of any other country that does that. And it's something to be so proud of, you know.
That's incredible.
Yeah, it's brilliant. Whole TV for the whole week. It's just that.
That's amazing.
It is. It's great.
Again, that's something I've talked about with others, but like preserving the language through the arts and inspiring people of all ages to get involved and to, if not personally partake in the arts, but like at least enjoy it as a viewer.
Yeah. And I think by accident, old traditional pieces, certainly musically, are being passed down or kept alive as well. The old folk songs, old folk traditions, they're being maintained and given a new life.
Right.
You know, artists in Wales as well are taking old stuff and putting a new lilt to it, reinventing all of it while keeping it alive. It's brilliant.
So how do you incorporate the languages into a bilingual production? I mean, Welsh and English are so different. And looking at a show like Barai, working on my pronunciation here.
Yeah, very good.
But with a show like that, something that I was really impressed by was how truly bilingual it was. and how fluid that dual language script was as opposed to the back-to-back model. And now, just last month or so, I'm really excited to see that it's been released on major North American and other English streaming sites like Amazon without needing an English or more segregated bilingual version. Yeah. Instead, it's fully blended together with probably a heavier amount of Welsh.
It's a funny, I think some of that is about confidence, because I think we're historically so used to assimilating or giving way to the dominant language that you feel you have to keep that language happy in order to survive. But the truth is, what they've done with Barrier, what Rondo have done, I think, is they've justified it by saying, but we're trying to reflect how a real prison would sound. And we went into a couple of prisons for research. And conversely, I was surprised that I found Welsh language prisoners there because I just didn't like, I know, I was like, Welsh people don't commit crimes. Welsh language people don't commit crimes, which is completely ridiculous.
And oh, insane. No, but I get that. I know what you mean. So
it was a lesson for me. But, you know, they're reflecting a prison where there are many languages, many religions, many backgrounds, all converging into this one place. And I think that's what they felt passionate about as a company as well, and have stuck to and tried to convey truthfully, I think.
Absolutely. That really comes through.
See, there's another crew and cast who are just so dedicated and wonderful to work for. Everybody just wanted to do the best and not have it be naff, you know?
Of course.
All the cast in the background, you know, they've used people who have been through the prison system. So you have that sense of authenticity. And also they were chipping in saying that wouldn't happen.
Oh, interesting.
Or why don't you try this? It's a hugely valuable part of the storytelling process as well.
That's such a wonderful approach to take. I had read something about that, actually. I knew there were people in the show who had these experiences in the prison system. But obviously we as viewers have no idea who.
No.
So it's not something you think about much as you're watching. But it's so interesting that they chose to do that and were open to it.
They were incredibly respectful. But of course, if you see something that you know isn't correct or isn't quite right, I think they were quite happy to say, that's not right. You need to change that. And of course, you know, being open and willing to listen to experience is always helpful to the greater good.
Oh, works so well. I got invested in it right away. And this was right after season 2 came out. So I ended up just watching both seasons over the course of a day or two. I think what I enjoyed is that while other prison shows tend to be flashier, maybe more dramatized, kind of over the top, this one didn't try to do too much. It didn't feel like it was trying to be this larger than life story. It was just, here's the day-to-day life of people in this situation. Here are the people who are working with them. And that's it. And I found that a lot more effective.
Yeah, I think the timings of the episodes helped with that as well. They were neatly contained, you know?
Yeah.
Short episodes, which means you're just stepping in for a short time with them. Because also, I think prison dramas can be, I mean, I love them, but they can be quite oppressive as well.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You can't help but see that there are sad stories there. So I think being able to lift it a bit is a skill as well.
For those who haven't seen the show, you play a chaplain working in the prison, and your character is a very good person, very caring, very much trying to help people who often don't necessarily want the help or who are maybe abusing that help, like using chapel services to trade drugs. And that's a difficult position for someone to be in. I would think that requires a very particular mindset and personality. Did you do much research into real life situations that people like prison chaplains face?
Yeah, I enjoy doing research, basically. I love it. It's almost my favorite part of the job. But we were lucky. We did go into a local prison a couple of times, which was far scarier than I thought it would be.
Yeah, I would imagine.
Yeah, I thought, yeah, I'm fine. I'm fine with this. I'm not worried at all. And I was surprised how quickly I kept my head down.
Oof.
Physically, I just dropped and kept looking at the floor. It was really interesting. I was like, I'm in absolute protection mode.
Oh, that would be scary. Yeah, I would be scared to do that. I mean,
everyone was wonderful, but we were warned about a couple prisoners who were intimidating, and it was all in hand. There was no problem, but you know, they weren't wrong.
Wow.
It was brilliant. But the thing I think, and I spoke to a chaplain as well, a prison chaplain, who was superb. And then I read a book written by a chaplain. And I think the whole thing that kept coming up all the time, which was actually in the script as well, was this idea of second chances, the idea of no judgment, a sort of forgiveness and a stillness. And once I read that, I was like, okay, so her rhythm is different. You know, the prison can be frenetic, or it can be, you have to physically present yourself in that space in order to not be toppled. There's something about it that they literally have to fill the space. Otherwise, someone will spot you. And, you know, they all said that. And the thing is with her, I think, that I was trying to find, or, and I kept reading about, was that you could stand your ground, or you could inhabit that space without being threatening, without postulating. Mm. You could be there with confidence and care. And I think that's the thing I was trying to find, because it's incredible, isn't it? When you have a faith, that's what you read with chaplaincy, and that's what they come up against as well. There's a lot of, that's rubbish, don't believe in it. But having to hold on to your faith.
Yeah, even in that environment.
Yeah, is astounding. I was like, gosh, it must live throughout her body. She must be grounded to such an extent that whatever comes her way, she can hold the space, you know?
Yeah, and she's dealing with some pretty unsettling characters as well. I mean,
yeah.
One character developing this fixation and being in that environment, and I'd be scared.
I know.
So
I know, absolutely. But that to have that faith in her God, I suppose, but to have faith in humanity as well is admirable. And like you say, it's not something that I couldn't anchor myself to that alone. I need a perspex glass.
Right, of course. Yeah. Oh my God.
But you know, that's why she's wonderful. And she had to be honest with herself. So the whole thing is heartbreaking for her as well.
It is. Yeah. And that seems to be a running theme in the series of people trying to help others, caring about others, and getting into trouble themselves because of it.
Yes. Yes.
It's so well done. And I would strongly encourage people to see it. Even those who aren't normally big on prison dramas, it's got a very different tone from the norm. Feels very real, very raw. I'm thinking I could see this being people's day-to-day lives, you know?
No, I agree. I agree. The writer, you know, he worked so hard on the things that happen in that program. That was important to him, that he was reflecting true events. He wasn't just inventing. They were inspired by stuff he'd been told or read.
I didn't know that. That's really interesting.
Yeah, he worked really hard. So did the producers, to maintain that truth, really.
I think it gives it a level of intensity and authenticity, and inspires this much more emotional impact as a result. Because you've got characters that you know have done some bad things, but you can also find the humanity in them. And it makes you feel a bit conflicted at times.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Nobody ends up in prison. Nobody's there because they want to be. Life's dealt them a bad blow, and then they made bad choices, you know. Mm. And when we went into the prisons, it's hard listening to people's stories because they're there. It's too late. I don't mean too late as in, you know, but you have to confront what you've done.
Right.
And it's really sad.
It is, yeah. But I'm glad the showrunners took that sort of no-frills, character-driven approach, because from a storytelling perspective, the result, while hard to watch at times, was definitely effective. And I'm sure you appreciate that, because you've got a background in writing and storytelling as well. You've written scripts and seen them brought to life while also bringing other people's characters to life. Did that interest in writing come after the acting? Were you acting for a while before you got into writing? Or did you always have an interest in reading, writing, storytelling, and that's what drove you to acting?
I mean, I was thinking about this earlier because I love books. I'm totally obsessed with books.
Oh, me too.
Even the way I hold them, or my treat, if I've got time off work, I'll just go and sit in the bookshop. And I'm weirdly excited by a new book, all of that stuff.
I don't think it's weird at all. I think it's wonderful to be that excited about new books.
Well, you understand. And I really remember my dad, when he'd go, right, we're going out, you and me, we'd go to the airport, to Cardiff Airport, where at that time you could watch the planes take off. And there was a small bookshop there, and I was allowed to choose a book. And then we'd sit on a bench and watch the planes.
Oh, nice. Oh, that's cute.
And that was my trip with my dad. And I remember buying Fantastic Mr. Fox. And then I remember someone buying me The Hobbit. And there is something about those two books. I remember physically holding them and getting excited. I think I'm oversharing.
Oh, no. I absolutely love those books. The Hobbit and Tolkien in particular, just magical.
Oh, my gosh. But you know what's weird, right? Because I loved The Hobbit. And then I think something told me, you can't like things like The Hobbit because it's fantasy and it's weird, right? And it's sci-fi. Something in school or something made me not go to the next level, right?
Oh, no.
I know. And then when I was, I think probably about 15 years ago, I started reading Ursula Le Guin.
Good choice, yeah.
And then picked up all of them. And I was like, oh my gosh, these are just. And then I remembered how much I loved sci-fi.
Yeah.
I've rediscovered all of that now, which is brilliant. But I think my love for books is the thing that absolutely cemented this need for storytelling, whether I'm absorbing it, trying to write it, in it. There's something so magical and exciting about listening to a history or working a history out and seeing where it goes, what if, what's next. It's just brilliant. And if you haven't done the work and someone else is writing it, that's great. But also then you're jealous that you didn't write it if you think it's amazing.
It's funny you say that. I actually saw this discussion you had a few years back where you mentioned that your favorite play is The Crucible. Oh. And you said that if you'd been the one to write that play, you'd be kissing yourself all over. That was a great comment. And it made me laugh so hard. Yeah. And I was thinking, I love The Crucible. Interestingly, the first time I ever saw it performed, I was in college, my freshman year of college. And they had an amazing program where I think it was something like 4 performances a year. They brought in professional actors from Broadway and stuff. And, you know, I was in film school. I was in acting classes. I was in directing classes. They're like, you have to pick 2 to go to. And I went to all of them, of course. But one of those plays was The Crucible. It was the first time I'd seen it. And it was so interesting to me because they put this very, I guess, American spin on it in that it was an almost entirely Black cast. And they had this kind of hierarchy of the people with the darkest skin were the highest ranking characters. And then you went down and then the 2 lowest people on the totem pole were these 2 white people.
Yep.
It was such an interesting take. And it was an amazing performance. And I just remember then when I saw it again later with the different cast, I was like, this doesn't seem quite right. But it's an incredible play. It's such a powerful story. But I'm interested in knowing what to you makes it such a great show.
It's just, I always think, right, I cannot believe that when there is a blank page and The Crucible doesn't exist, The Messiah by Handel doesn't exist, there's just a blank page, and then something happens and that shit gets put on the page that is the most astounding pieces of work. And so for me, The Crucible, the fact that Arthur Miller went, right, all this shit is going down in America, McCarthy trials, all of that, how can I make a political statement and not make a statement, you know, not be accused of whatever, you know.
Right.
And then he takes the Salem witch trials. It's just astounding. And I watched it recently. My friend, actually, the guy who plays Peter Glynn,
oh, yeah,
in Barrier, he was in The Crucible recently at the Globe.
Oh, yeah.
So my daughter and I went. Oh my gosh, I was crying because love the play so much. I'd forgotten how classically written it is.
Oh, it's beautiful. No question.
And I was slightly worrying about my daughter that she wasn't, but she was absolutely absorbing it all. Because you know, this moral, that's what I love about it. There's an ethical, moral standoff where they're going, all you have to do is say the truth the way we see the truth. You have to live in the world that we see, and you have to acknowledge that world. If you just do that, you can live. And the fact that people are so morally rooted that they're prepared to die, it's just heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking.
Very, yeah.
I think it's such a clever piece. even the title of it.
I love the title. I do love the title. It kind of sets you up for the intensity of the show as a whole from the start. You're going in.
And the truth is, if I had written it, I'd probably do more than kissing. That's...
I love it. I think if you can find stories that you feel that way about, where you're just like, oh God, why didn't I invent this? You know, like,
I know,
it's a great feeling. And
why is my brain shit and not Arthur Miller? No. Oh, it's just wonderful. Yeah, it's brilliant. It's brilliant. It's brilliant. And in case you're interested on any level at all, my favorite books are The Count of Monte Cristo and The Master and Margarita.
I actually have not read that one.
Oh my gosh, it's brilliant. I love Russian literature. It's brilliant.
Actually, you know what the ridiculous thing is? I think there was a girl in high school who loved that book. And she,
Master Margarita.
Yeah, and she loaned it to me. And I never read it and I never gave it back.
Oh no!
I kept forgetting to return it to her and I never got around to reading it. And I just...
Right. This is your sign. You have to read The Master of Margarita.
I do still have it somewhere.
Oh, you must. I'm a bit annoyed that none of those writers are female because I all for that, as in I made a rule, I think last year, that I was only going to read female authors, which I stuck to. But I have to say those three are I just love them.
That's amazing. All right, I'll add it to my list. The thing is, I have like 1,000 books on my to-read list.
I know.
I have like these huge high fantasy and sci-fi series that I love. And
yeah. My saying to my daughter, because she's a good reader, but she always feels guilty about not reading the book she should read. And I'm always like, when you're ready, the book will wait for you. The book will wait.
That's fair. Well, it's been waiting decades at this point since I did.
That's okay.
High school.
That's okay.
When it comes to writing, you've done a lot of co-writing, it seems, for the plays and stuff. How has that gone for you? Because I've never been good at that. I've had to co-write some scripts in the past and invariably ended up annoyed and wanting to do it all myself. So.
I'm really bad at it. So whenever I've done writing workshops or writing weekends away and they go, okay, if you get into pairs, I literally could vomit.
Oh no.
I'm just like, I don't want to work with anyone. Which is bizarre, because as an actor, working together is the best thing ever. But as a writer, I think I'm honest if I say I actually hate it. I'm like, the best thing about writing is going into a room, shutting the door, and literally being in your own cocoon.
Yes.
And then you emerge and you can't believe 6 hours has gone.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's such a gift, that. And so when people go, right, why don't you four brainstorm an idea together? No, thank you. I really don't want to do that.
I totally get that. I'm there with you. I've worked in film so much, but I've never written for TV specifically. And when I talk to friends who have worked on longer series and I hear about the drama in the writer's room where you've got 10 people all trying to write together, and I'm like, how?
I know.
How do you do that? Just the thought gives me secondhand anxiety, because when I'm writing or world building, I've got my own ideas, and having to share that makes the process uncomfortable to me.
No. And also, I don't think I'm very judgmental, but I clearly am. Because when I'm doing stuff and then they present ideas, I'm like, well, that's shit. We're not doing that. Which is terrible. It's so unsupportive. But it's because I must just have a block about it. I don't know what it is, you know? I'm better in my own head.
Does that happen with acting?
No. Gosh, that... absolute opposite.
No, but I mean, like, as far as looking at, oh, I would have written this differently.
Well, it's funny because I'm not afraid of changing lines if I can justify it. If I can back it up with a decent argument why it needs changing for that character, then I'll approach producers or I'll approach the writer or whatever. But I'm very respectful because, as you know, that's an awful lot of work that writer has put in to coordinate all those stories and everything. But also, I feel that if I've done that work on that character and that's not how they would say that line or how they would speak, then I will say something. And if they say no, they say no, that's cool. But at least I've stuck up for the character a bit and gone, I don't think that's how they'd behave. And I've done it a couple of times. So I've got this phrase that I learned at drama school, which is work is your armor. If I've done my work properly in the research and I can back it up, my decisions or requests, then I think that's fair game. But if I just go in going, I don't like this line, that isn't good enough. I have to have a decent enough reason.
I had a big kerfuffle once when I was quite young. When I had first transitioned to film from theater, I was directing a film that I had written, and the lead actor was a main character in some major movies at the time. So he was pretty comfortable giving his input unsolicited. And we got along very well. We had a great time on the shoot. But there was one scene where he just could not do a particular line. Just couldn't do it. And he said, if it was a good line, I'd be able to do it. And I was like, or you're just shit at doing the line because I can say it fine. Why can't you? And we had this whole argument. Not a mean-spirited one. I mean, it wasn't angry or anything. But it was this very snarky banter where we just kept going back and forth. And he could not say it. And it became this whole drama. So.
But you know, I've done that. You're saying this story and I'm like, yeah, I've done that. Yeah, I've gone. It's the line. It's not me. Right. It's completely the line. And of course it's us.
I don't know. It's probably both. And it had been a very long day too. So it was the middle of the night at that point. Everybody was exhausted. Everybody was over time wanting to go home, including me. So, you know, I think everybody was kind of loopy by then too.
I know. Well, I empathize completely with both of you.
Looking back, I empathize with them too, because I've certainly had lines as an actor where I was just like, I can't do this. This doesn't make sense to me.
I know. And it just feels like there's egg all over my face.
Oh, God. How do you manage it in the reverse if you've written something and an actor is just like, this doesn't work for me? Have you had that happen?
I remember I'd written a children's play and in my head it was so clear. And then we had a read through and they were all like, yeah, don't get that bit and don't get that bit. And I was genuinely shocked. I was like, what do you mean? It's obvious.
Yeah.
But they all said the same thing. So, you know, it's absolute humility that you have to go, okay, I can't argue with five people around the table. I've not done this right.
That's fair.
I think being an actor, I don't know if you feel the same, but if I've written something and an actor says the same thing, if I know that they've worked and they have decent reason, I can't argue with that. I have to just go, that's fair enough. Okay. Because they're the one that has to say it. They have to be it.
Yeah.
So I think there's a bit of humility there as well. Unless you're Arthur Miller, then shut up. But also we're neurotic, aren't we, as actors as well? We're like, can we go again? Can we do it again? That was very good. Can we go again? We just get in our own way all the time. It's like, oh gosh, just turn up, learn your words, know it back to front, do your best, go home. I'm better at that now. I'm far better.
Over time, you definitely learn to let go a bit more on both sides.
Absolutely.
Obviously, you've done a lot of theater and you've done a lot of television, some really great series, great stage productions. And of course, they're such different mediums. Do you have a preference as a writer and or as an actor for either the more dynamic nature of theater or the more permanent nature of film? Because if you do a play, every performance can be a different experience. And you might come back to the same show later on in another production and do it completely differently. And in the same vein, if you write a play, you might see it performed any number of times over the years with many different people bringing it to life, which is really the opposite of film, where it's more of a one and done, and that's it. It's out there forever, exactly as it is. Are you more drawn to one or the other, or do you enjoy them pretty equally as their own unique mediums?
With acting, I think I can probably answer that question a bit better. I think with writing and acting, I utilize work as your armor. You do the research, you do the work, and you set it down, whichever one. With acting, you have to forget that the camera's there almost. It all becomes quite focused and insular when you're on set, I think. Whereas with theater, you're shifting and changing according to the environment that's around you. It's like a living, breathing thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think I can apply that to the writing so much. It makes more sense to me as an actor. And what I've witnessed with other people as well, the whole draft thing with theatre and TV, the amount of drafts people have to go through, it seems astounding to me that people keep going. Because I think with Barrier, there were like 26 different drafts.
Wow.
That to me is a real desire to get it right.
Yeah.
And that's what I see in theatre as well. And it's what I would like to be able to do. But I suppose I can do that with acting. The stamina I have in acting is far greater. But with writing, you lose confidence, I think. You just go, I don't know what I'm trying to say anymore with each draft. And I think that's the tricky thing. With TV writing, you have many people you have to please. Whereas theatre, maybe you would hope in the new writing theatres, you know, there's more of a relationship there where they're trying to support. But I don't know. I don't know, because it's always different.
Yeah, of course.
You know? And I think my experience is greater with acting when it comes to the two of them, really, with comparisons.
I know it's a difficult thing to answer because in many ways, they're just impossible to compare.
Yeah.
There's something nice about the live nature of theater where it can change over time. It's not bound to a specific performance or even cast or crew or production design. So there's an opportunity to see something done in a lot of different ways that you may not have expected that could turn into like, oh, wow, that's not what I ever planned for, but that's interesting.
You know? Yeah.
Whereas if it's on screen, if it's captured and then edited, that's what it is. That's your performance. That's how the writing is being conveyed. And that's kind of like it.
Well, I suppose with writing, in my head, it's like once you've found or made your peace with it, you have to let it go. Regardless of the medium, definitely as the writer, you lose control. You know, you're not even credited half the time.
Yeah. That's true.
You know?
Yeah.
And so that's gone. And then when it comes to acting, there's sort of the same energy with it, certainly in TV, because you don't get to choose the take. You don't get to choose how they edit
right. All
those takes of that scene. You have no control like that, which is, again, I suppose that's the skill as well, isn't it? Is that you turn up, you do your very best, and then you let the next stage pick up where you left it.
Right.
And hope you don't look completely crap.
Yeah, you do have to let it go and just kind of trust. The people that are taking it from there.
Yeah, and I think in that respect, they are both the same. You've had your time with it, really.
That's an interesting way of saying it. I like that. You've had your time with it, like on stage or on camera. That does apply.
Yeah.
I like that.
But I think as well, I was asked, I'd written something and then I was asked if I wanted to be in it. And I said no. I really regretted it then and thought, oh, why have I said no? But I did know why. It's because my relationship with it was writing it. And maybe that wouldn't happen today. I don't know. But I really struggled with then acting in it. It was like I was sort of regurgitating on some level. I felt exactly that. I'd had my time with it and now it was to let someone else have a go.
That's an interesting view because you do see a lot of people who write and then act in their own stories, which I used to do.
Yeah, and I think it's really brilliant. But I hadn't written it with me in mind.
Yeah,
that's
okay,
the difference.
That's fair.
You know, I'd just written it and then was offered. I don't know, I just didn't feel it was right, which might be stupid.
No. I think this is one of those industries where, and, you know, obviously this doesn't apply to everybody, but to me, it's one of those things where if you don't enjoy what you're doing, if you don't feel it's right, if you don't find the fun in it, even on productions where it's stressful and it's a lot of work, I feel like there has to be a level of enjoyment that you're doing something creative.
Yeah.
And if you're doing it just to force yourself to do it, I feel like it ends up lacking.
Yeah.
It doesn't have the same heart. And you have to be honest with yourself about that. If you're not feeling it, you're not feeling it.
No. And it's a skill you have to learn, I think. It is that thing of saying no, which I, as a freelancer,
it
takes a few years to go, that doesn't feel right to me. I'm not going to do it.
It's hard because you don't want to pass things up
and
then have that come back and be like, oh, I should have done that because now I have no other opportunities.
Because now they're in Broadway. And I said no. No, well, it's also the people-pleasing thing, isn't it? You don't want to upset people.
Mm.
And it's like, they don't care.
Right.
Everybody moves on. It's all fine. Nobody's going to hate you. It's fine.
Right, exactly. I mean, they'll find that you don't want to roll. It's like, okay, we'll move on.
But also you have to find, you know, there's courage in that as well. Like how many people have played Hamlet?
Oh, God,
and
yeah.
I always think, oh, my gosh, when someone, the new person gets the chance. If you open the door to being intimidated by the others who have played that part, it's so pointless. You know, it's your turn And make of it what you will.
Yeah, you can't compare yourself to other people.
No. And I think that, you know, like you say, it happens all the time where you just have to go, well, it's mine now. It takes such bravery sometimes with some of the stuff that happens in this industry.
Oh, I agree. You've played such a great range of characters too, and I love it. The first thing I saw you in was actually Kreith.
Oh, was it?
Yeah. I loved it. Loved the look. But I just remember thinking, there must be a reason they're bringing in this totally random new pathologist. And then the moment you had that phone call with Caddy and she was like, call me later. I really value your opinion. I was like, okay, you're not talking about the case, please.
No.
It's a new love interest going on here. So I thought it was clear early on where that was going, but then they didn't actually have an on-screen relationship until the following season, which surprised me. Did you know going to the show that you'd be playing Caddy's girlfriend, or did it just evolve that way at the end of the second season?
No, I think they did flag it. They did say when we first started filming, you know, this could develop. So I think they had that in mind. But getting Kreith was, it was last minute. I was filming Treedic Pimp Dodnod 35 days.
Yeah, yeah.
And then literally at the end of that, I went straight into Hidden Kreith. And it was 15 days I was filming. And it was just because I knew Shan as well, because we're friends. So it was just lovely. And she's so supportive and wonderful. So it was a treat. I think we'd played sisters.
Yeah, you were sisters in 35 days. And I saw that afterwards. And I was like, oh no, what's going on?
This is weird. This is messing with my head.
Yeah. But your character in that was nuts. And
yeah, I love her.
Yeah, and didn't you get nominated for BAFTA Cymru Award for that? Yeah,
I did.
Years late.
That was
congrats
very
on that.
Lovely. No, it was so lovely. That was very unexpected and special. I remember reading it and just going, "Oh, I know her. I know her." And I'm sort of fiercely protective of her. I remember someone on set one day went, "Right, what's the slag doing today?"
Oh, no.
And I was like, she's not a slag. Don't say that about her.
She was a very interesting character. I couldn't really figure her out because one minute she's being nice to or protective of her siblings, and the next she's just messing with everyone and acting like a complete whack job.
Yeah, well, you know, the short answer to that is, in my head, she had been constantly let down and surrounded by idiots. So she just had enough. I think she was just completely unafraid to say her piece. And the way that Siobhan Jones had written it, when it's like that on the page, it's almost like you don't have to act because she's just written it for you. She's written it in such a way in the Welsh, just saying the words with absolutely nothing conveys something because she's just clever like that. But it was a gift of a part. I kept trying to manifest a spin-off series for her, but it never happened.
Amazing. It's fun when you have characters like that who don't fit the usual mold and are a little off because they allow you to play around a lot more. I know you also played a, and it's so funny because I had no idea this was you, even though you kind of look the same. I think just your mannerisms and everything were so different in, I think it was a web series, and I'm not going to try to pronounce the Welsh because I know that I can't.
Oh, what was it? Was it Merched Parches?
Yes. I'm afraid of the CHs because I can't pronounce those, but
no, you do enough, I think, to support the Welsh language. You do enough.
Yes, I saw you in that, and I had watched that because it's on YouTube, and I'll link to that as well. That's a fun one. That's just like a strange, quirky, half comedic, half really dark show.
It's a great idea, that, isn't it, with the podcast and being sort of obsessed with podcasts, and it comes full circle as a story. But yeah, that character was just fun.
She was so funny. I mean, you played it in such a way where she made me laugh.
Good.
But I didn't associate that character with Rachel from Crut.
No.
You know, like, and it's not like you changed your look completely. I mean, you looked a bit different, but it took me several tries to realize that was you. And I was like, oh, wait. And I think it's so cool the way you all take so much care to really blend into these characters. You know, you don't just get up there and perform them on the surface. You really create a character with all the little mannerisms, the tone of voice. Everything is, I feel, even in smaller projects, just carefully crafted, which is really lovely to see and very inspiring.
Well, that's lovely to say as well. It's all of us, isn't it? You just want to do a good job, even if you're temping for the day.
Yeah.
And so when I was at college, you know, I did a couple of jobs as in waitressing or whatever, and I was appalling. You know, I was so bad. And I remember working in a pub and, oh gosh, I hated it. But also I was shit, you know. But I remember just thinking, why can't I, whatever the job, why would you not just do your best? And as soon as my head flipped like that, I just started getting better jobs, even if they were just jobs to pay the mortgage or whatever, because my attitude was different. And I think it's the same with everything. If you just try your very best, and then everybody, I think people appreciate it so much and you come off better.
Absolutely. Although I am glad you eventually found a job you genuinely love and, you know, aren't shit at. But it's just been a joy watching all these shows and watching all of you, because there is a small pool of actors there who do these kinds of Welsh English shows. And I've said this over and over, but all of you do such an amazing job of, anytime I see you in something, it never feels like you're repeating yourself. It never feels like I'm watching the same character twice. Even when you're all acting together in multiple projects, I don't look at it and think, oh, I've seen that before. So it's been inspiring to watch these shows where there's so much diversity in each person's performance.
Oh, that's lovely. I think as well, it's funny, isn't it? Because if the work is in danger of drying up or it's sporadic, when it comes, why would you not make the most of it? When you have it, you grab it with both hands and enjoy yourself. The best thing about TV is being on set with people. It's the best thing ever because people are so wonderful. And you're just, even with the serious stuff, as long as you know when to take yourself off and go, right, I need to focus now because I've got a big scene coming up or whatever. As long as you have the confidence to put that boundary down, the rest of it is just a ball. It's just brilliant. And I don't think I've ever worked with anyone on set who's horrible, ever.
Maybe I'm jaded coming from the American film industry, but that's an incredible thing to be able to say.
Yeah, I know. Very. But that's the thing, isn't it? It's just, you can't rest on your laurels and you can't not do the work, because it's about gratitude, but also just make the most of it. It's a privilege, isn't it? The job.
It's special to be able to make a living doing something you love. Something creative that you're inspired by, that means so much to you. It's really a privilege to reach a point where that's possible. Having grown up acting and then getting into working backstage with assistant directing, lighting, sound, then moving into film directing, and ultimately realizing I was better suited to editing and production photography than trying to run a set with my lack of organizational skills. Now focusing full-time on writing, I'm very lucky that I've been able to spend so many years just moving from one form of art to another. Because whatever I'm doing, I'm passionate about it. And I'm grateful to always be creating in some capacity.
But that's the thing. You're clearly creative and you make sure you have an outlet for that. Doing this is amazing. And I think even with my daughter now, she's talking about acting and going down that route. And I'm trying to say to her, have the confidence that acting is more than just that thing you think it is. If you broaden it into creativity, into creating, into storytelling, you don't know where that's going to take you.
Right.
And if you're willing to just keep that door open, things will happen that you hadn't even thought of. As you know, you have bad days where you just think, oh gosh, there's no work. But the truth is, if we acknowledge that essentially, with or without the work, we are creatives and all will be well, and you just go off and do something nice, like read The Crucible.
Or The Hobbit.
Or watch Lord of the Rings. Yeah. You'll be all right. You'll be okay, because it's, oh gosh, it's just who we are, isn't it? The good and the bad.
It really is. Actually, the first person I talked to for this podcast was John Peel, who's a wonderful sci-fi and kids horror and fantasy author going way back. And he was one of my earliest inspirations as a writer.
Wow.
And something he said that is so true is that you write because you have to. You just have to do it. You have to get it out. And I think that's the same with any form of creative expression. You have to do it because it's in you and you can't not.
Exactly. And also, if you're doing something that doesn't mirror that, you feel it. You feel low.
Yeah. You feel stuck.
Yeah. There's a great video, I don't know if you've seen it, of Uta Hagen, and someone asks her, oh gosh, I'm too flighty and I'm not rooted enough when I'm acting. And all. Have you seen it? It was doing the rounds last week.
No, I haven't. I haven't seen it.
Uta Hagen just breaks down going, because you're not working. If you were working every day, then you'd be rooted and you'd know who you were as a performer. And it's just, it's so beautiful, you know, that sort of plight of not being able to do the thing you need to do all the time.
Yeah, the ups and the downs.
Oh, gosh, yeah. We're all in it together.
I love it. I love everything about the creative arts, and I love connecting with other people who feel the same. So before we head out, there's something totally random that came to my head. I don't know if I'm making this up or if I heard you say it somewhere, but you love horses. Is that right?
Yes.
Did you grow up working with them, or was it more that you admired them from afar?
So I grew up with horses. We had five growing up, and they were all wonderful. We got them all by accident as well. We didn't buy them. Like, people would just didn't want them anymore. And they were all brilliant. I never went to a riding school or anything. It was very much a farming or countryside, get on. If they throw you off, get back on again. So it's very much that. So the two things that I really need to do work-wise is I want a job where I'm having to horse ride, and I want a job where I'm a rally driver. Because I love to drive as well.
I can totally see that. You'd be so good.
I'm not into horse racing or anything like that, right? It really upsets me.
Me too.
Because they're so majestic and beautiful, and I just can't bear them getting hurt. But I was watching the cross country, the jumping the other day, which I never watch because of that, because I worry for them. And I was like, they work so hard. They kept calling them honest. They kept saying it was an honest attempt at the jump and on it. And I think they meant like this horse was giving basically to the rider. And you just think, God, the temperaments that you come across with horses and the ability they have to make a decision to connect with you or to have a relationship with you is just astounding. And I think that's why, because I'd love to have horses now, but I'm scared that I won't have that connection like I did with the five growing up.
I have a family friend who has a rescue horse that she's had for ages, and that horse is her world. She's so loving and so devoted to it. So who knows? Maybe there'll be a rescue horse in your future that needs you, and you'll unexpectedly find that connection again.
Do you know the writer Jiddy Cooper?
I do not.
So there's a big series now on Netflix called Rivals. Jiddy Cooper is like this wonderful, I don't know how to describe her, novelist. She was sort of prolific 80s, 90s. And they're basically upper class sex romps. Nice. But they're brilliant, right? They're brilliant books. And there's a famous character that runs through a few of her books called Rupert Campbell Black.
Of course.
And when I was traveling, when I was younger, I was going through all of Jiddy Cooper's books, the ones that had Rupert Campbell Black in, who I loved. I was so in love with him because also he had a horse.
Because
he was a polo player. But this horse, in the middle of this book, when I was on a beach in Thailand, died.
Oh.
And I was absolutely inconsolable on this beach in Thailand, crying at flipping Jiddy Cooper, you know, this not classical literature, even though she's brilliant, you know, I was heartbroken. All my friends and all these Thai people coming around going, what's the matter? Oh my gosh, what's wrong? Because I couldn't breathe. But it's because it was a horse.
Oh,
it was a horse,
God.
And because I was in love with Rupert Campbell Black.
Oh, that's amazing.
You know, it's all ridiculous. But Warhorse is coming to Cardiff soon, and my friend's in it, and I'm nervous about going.
Oh, no, that's a hard show to watch.
Exactly. Anything to do with horses, I just, you know. I did one job with a horse, right? And it was a black stallion with one eye called Diablo. And it was amazing.
So I think what we need is for you to do like a Welsh version of a Western next.
Yes.
Get you like riding across the plains.
Exactly. Oh gosh, I'd be so happy.
Or maybe an ancient Celt, a historical piece.
Exactly. Like, why aren't I in Game of Thrones? Yeah. You know?
Oh, that would be great. Yeah, you need a show like that. That's what we need.
Yeah.
We need next.
I've got the hair and the riding skills. I can do that.
I'll be keeping my fingers crossed to hear news of that soon.
Yes, I'll manifest that.
Amazing. And on that note, we'll wind it down here. I'm so thrilled that we finally got to talk. It's been so great speaking with you.
Oh, that's so lovely. I think it's wonderful what you're doing. I think it's brilliant and I'm full of admiration. I've really enjoyed talking to you as well. Thank you so much for supporting Flipping Welsh TV as well. It's brilliant.
Oh, I love it. All these shows, films, theatre productions, and I love the Welsh language. It's beautiful to listen to. I'm very excited about the reach that modern streaming platforms are giving the language now. And with an increasing number of not only bilingual, but fully Welsh series and films being picked up for international audiences, I'm hopeful that it'll continue to expand and that the average English speaker around the world will have access to these wonderful shows.
Have you seen Kneecap?
No, but you're the second person who's mentioned that.
What they're doing there is they're pretty unapologetic about Irish. And I watched it going, okay, we need to be more like them. It's so brilliant.
Oh, wow. Although Welsh is obviously a lot more prevalent as opposed to Gaelic, which is sadly not spoken at all by most people, let alone as a first language.
But that's what's interesting, I think. With Kneecap, there's no apology, there's no explanation. They are just who they are. And it's inspiring. Regardless of where we're both at with whatever, I watched it just going, oh, I want to be like them. Because they just don't care. And that's how it should be. Which is, I think, what we're saying is that thing of going, why can't it just go out as it is, as we are? That's exactly what they do.
And that's how it should be.
Yeah.
And I think especially in this day and age when we have so many shows that are either bilingual or in different languages. I mean, we have mainstream German shows, Portuguese shows. Yeah. Why not have mainstream Welsh shows? I mean, there's no reason not to at this point. People read subtitles all the time.
Exactly. Exactly.
So I'm excited to see more of that as we go along. I know you're in a new mystery series that's just coming out now called Stillwaters, which for listeners is a spinoff of The Light in the Hall. And I will be pushing everyone I can to check that out, along with Barrier, now that it's out in North America, and all the other great work you've done as well. Best of luck with your future projects. As always, I can't wait to see what the next creative endeavor is. And I could tell you, I will be the first in line to watch.
Brilliant. Oh, thank you so much.
Stillwaters has now been released and is available on BBC iPlayer if you have access to it. As we discussed, 35 Days is available as well. Mally's in season 3, along with Gwydion Rees, who I spoke to last episode. And I will link to those in the description, as well as every other show you can possibly check out, including the first season of Barrier, which has finally been released here. So please give them all a look, and I hope you enjoy them as much as I have. Thank you for once again listening to The Art of Imagination, and I hope to see you again next time.